Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. It's Monday night, recording this for a Tuesday, and I have the collapsible Dan Wyke of the Orange County Register. Dan, how's it going?
Suddenly very bookable.
Very bookable. You're free. It's summer break for you.
I have big plans for my summer. I mean, that's the thing. Like, when you're on a beat like this, and it takes up so much of your time, when you get your free time, you have things that you definitely want to accomplish.
Right.
Like, this is the summer that I get into, like, I'm hoping, like, some, like, viable, like, athletic shape.
Okay, so, like, maybe some MMA training.
Yeah, or, like, I just want to be able to do some pull-ups. Like, I've never been able to do pull-ups my entire life.
Yeah.
And I would like to be able to do some before that's, like, you know, I'm going to turn 34 this summer. I feel like my pull-up window is closing.
It's probably already closed, but it's not. I mean, that doesn't sound crazy that you could learn how to. I guess you're not learning how to do pull-ups. You know how to do a pull-up, but that you could train yourself into doing, like, rattle off like 10 at a park somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny. Like, I wondered if there's no way I'll be able to do 10. Like, I'd settle for 3.
Okay.
Like, if I were to, like, be in a situation where I was hanging on, like, off the side of a building, like some fast 7 type situation.
Sure.
Right. I would die so quickly because of my lack of upper arm strength.
Right. Yeah. You don't have that action movie grip.
Yeah. Well, just even a functional human adult male grip would work.
Sure. You have a child's grip.
Yeah. I'm like a very weak baby.
Like a weak baby that's been eating nothing but like buttered popcorn for 2 days.
That actually isn't all that inaccurate. I have had a lot of popcorn lately. Okay, so I assume you want to talk Clippers.
I do.
That's the team I used to cover,
Yeah, the team you used to cover. What happened?
What happened? It was, man, I think it was just kind of a mixture of like 3 or 4 things that really caught up with them. I do think that kind of ultimately they ran out of gas. That fatigue was a factor for this team. They looked very tired, I thought, in Game 7. And that certainly has to, you can point to their lack of bench, the minutes that Doc played the starter, should he have trusted the bench more? So all that stuff, that exists. I think they were up 19 in the Game 6 at home, and they stopped playing. And then they got tight, really tight.
Yeah.
And it was funny. In a weird way, I've got this theory that it would have almost been better for them to have been playing that game on the road. Because Clipper fans, particularly the ones that followed this team for a long time, have this sort of expectation of doom. And when that 19-point lead was down to 13, and then it kind of in the fourth quarter trickled down to like 10, like that's when I could start to really feel the angst. Like, I think I tweeted, the first time I tweeted the word angst, they were up like 13 points in the fourth quarter.
And it's just like that accumulation of just decades of garbage.
Yeah, and I don't blame them for that. It's just kind of, that's sort of the emotional baggage that they carry from their past and their fans. Now, how much of that, you know, translates to on-court stuff, I don't know. But, you know, it certainly can't feel good when you miss. You're in the midst of missing 14 shots in a row, and at like shot 4, the groans are starting.
Right.
You know, and it was just sort of this feeling that something bad was going to happen, and it did. So I think that happened. And I think some credit goes to Houston that, I mean, they played very hard in games 5 and 7, very hard, harder than the Clippers.
Which was probably easy to do because they didn't play hard at all in 3 and 4, so they were well rested.
Yeah, and the Fred fresh legs. And they were able to kind of push the Clippers around in those games, and James Harden played very well in both of those games, and it just, you know, that's how you lose. Like, you're up 3-1, and it's a little bit deceptive because you only got one crack at home. Like, in theory, you should lose Game 5,
right?
You know what I mean? And then you put yourself in a position where weird stuff can happen by not showing up in Game 5. You put yourself in a weird position where things can, like, I had a theory of how they would lose Game 6. I was wrong. I was half wrong. So my theory had to do with the officials.
Okay.
And it was sort of, there was an official working that game that the Clippers have kind of a checkered history with. And I'll let you guys guess. I'm going to infer.
I don't remember who it was. I'm looking. Yeah. I'm looking. I'll figure it out.
Okay, yeah, it's not that hard. And my feeling was that, okay, there might be a couple weird calls. The Clipper players will start to complain a little bit. Then the fans will get complainy and angsty, and then it'll snowball.
Oh, Scott.
That was sort of my scenario.
Scott Foster?
Yeah.
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 Not great.
Okay, that was sort of my scenario for how they would lose. And the angst part turned out to be right. The officiating, that had nothing to do with the game.
Right.
You know what I mean? You're up 19. You got to put that team away. And even still, you know, talking to players after Game 7, a little bit today, that stuff, I mean, that Game 6 is going to be something, you know, that's kind of their Bill Buckner moment now. And it's going to be hard to get past that until you get past it.
I didn't buy this whole thing of like, oh, well, they just had a letdown because the Spurs thing was so emotional. I believe the Spurs win was emotional for them, but then they came out and took a 3-1 lead. Like, I just don't believe that they didn't have it after that series because they had it in the first four games.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I mean, look, they should have won Game 2. They led by 10 in the second half of Game 2.
Yeah.
Without Chris Paul. You know, I mean, they split two games on the road against the team without Chris Paul. Now, certainly the Rockets team in the last three games are totally different than the Rockets team in the first four.
Yes.
And, I mean, some of that just goes to, like, weird basketball. I mean, if I think at the start of the series, if you said to Doc Rivers, hey, Josh Smith is going to jump shoot you out of the playoffs. I think that's generally the type of that's like, you'd say, okay, prove it.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's the type of, and Josh Smith is going to end up shooting you out of the playoffs. If you were going to say, hey, Doc, Pablo Frigioni is going to make three of the biggest plays in Game 7. That's going to be the guy. You would say, okay, we can counter that. Well, they couldn't. And just weird basketball stuff happened. And it was, boy, what a great playoffs for former Knicks, by the way.
Oh, God. Was, oh, huge.
And I tweeted this thing. How did the Knicks not win the East?
It's
keep that core together.
It seems impossible that the Knicks didn't win the East.
Shumpert, Frigioni, J.R. Smith. That's the
technically Corey Brewer's a former Knick.
Mozgov.
Yeah, Mozgov. It's a bevy of talent. I mean, they are the, you know, the triple A
for the rest of the NBA.
Yeah, the triple A for the rest of the NBA. It's a big deal. That's what we've always said about the Knicks.
So when we try to fix the Clippers lately, essentially what we're going to do is we're just going to look at the Knicks roster and say, can they get Jason Smith?
Is Lou Amundson available?
Bring him back. He was one-time Clipper, training camp invitee, Lou Amundson. Sign him back up. They wouldn't even have to stitch up the new jerseys. So anyway, go ahead. Let's move on. We're going to off-track.
Well, all right. So you know this team inside and out pretty well. Are they chokers? Did they just collapse? Did they not want it enough? Are they flawed? Like, what is the... Because that, I mean, everything gets thrown out now, and I'm not crazy about buying into, like, the, oh, these guys don't want it. They're, you know, female body parts and all this. Like, I don't buy into any of that, any of that rhetoric. But it's like, they did collapse, and I think this is the first time you look at their playoff failings and think, no, you screwed up. You should have had this. Like, you blew this one. So what are they?
I mean, my theory is that, and Doc says that you might tend to subscribe to this, is they wanted it too much, maybe, and they pressed. You know, the thing that I keep coming back to when I watch them in these games, and I first had this thought after Game 5 against Oklahoma City last year, and I work for a fairly good-sized newspaper, so I can't really write about this necessarily without getting laughed at. The scene that keeps popping up in my mind whenever I think about the Clippers playing basketball in these clutch situations is when Chris Farley and Tommy Boy is trying to describe his precious little sale.
I use that for something.
At the restaurant.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what it's like to watch them in these moments.
I seriously used that on a podcast last week.
Okay.
But I don't know what it might have been about the Clippers, but no, go. I'm in.
Sorry for not listening.
Yeah, it's fine. Like, I mean, it would have been nice if you pretended that you listened. If you'd been like, oh, yeah, I remember that now. Like, that could have been your response.
Totally.
Yeah.
That was great.
Yeah.
What an astute observation. No, I mean, but, like, that's, like, I mean, to me, it seems like they just kind of, like, wanted so bad, and they just choke all the life out of the game. You know, that to me, it's, You know, now is that the result of narrative? Is that the result of, you know, I tried to write this and I don't know if I did a good enough job on it, but it was sort of like, you know, they so desperately don't want to be their past.
Yeah.
Because it's not their past. You know, but they constantly hear about their, like, you know what I mean? Like, Magic Johnson saying, well, the Clippers are still the Clippers. You know, and I love Magic as much as anybody. I'm like, no, they're not. This isn't the time in history where if you were a Clipper, you had to worry about your ACL running out of your body.
Right. This isn't Lamon Murray. This isn't Danny Manning.
This is a team that's been in the playoffs 4 years in a row. This is a team that's been on the doorstep of the Conference Finals 2 years in a row. And these are new problems. Like, they're problems. There's no question they're problems. But these aren't Benoit Benjamin Clipper problems.
Right.
You know, these aren't Donald Sterling Clipper problems. This is a team that, you're right, the real question should be, it's not, oh, the Clippers are the Clippers. It's, why aren't the Clippers elite yet?
Right.
And you know, and if you do have three max guys, I think the expectation is that you better be elite.
Well,
and, you know.
That's the thing, is now they have three max guys. How do you add to that?
Mm-hmm. Well, this is where it gets tricky. It gets really tricky, and you know, I think you can't really afford to let DeAndre go, because you don't. It's not like you've got enough money in your under the cap to absorb him leaving and replace him.
You don't get to reappropriate that $20 million.
No, they can't throw it at LaMarcus Aldridge or Marcus All or whatever.
Right.
Be like, hey, we lost DeAndre Jordan. Let's just go get Marcus All instead. It doesn't work like that. So that's obviously the top priority 100%. It's re-sign DeAndre, and you give him whatever you want, because odds are, in year three of that contract, if he takes a 5-year max, he'll be, at least at the time, he'll be slightly undervalued.
Right.
Because with the cap going up, or at least appropriately valued, maybe. So I think that's what you do that, and you just, they've got to do better on the little stuff. You know, they've got to do better on their minimum guys. And ultimately, a lot of it is going to come down to their personnel getting better. Spencer Hawes is going to be important. Unless they're able to trade him, he needs to be better. And this is a guy who's been serviceable through much of his career, certainly playable, and you know, was by and large not playable. Now, I actually thought he played just fine in this series. When he played, he was, in my opinion, he was a positive, which is, that's steps in the right direction for what he had been giving them. And I mean, he was a DNP type of guy for a big chunk of the Spurs series.
But don't you couldn't that be a problem, though, that they don't trust that they can play him?
Yes, that is a problem.
Yeah.
And I think that's a total problem. And I think that's, you know, it's kind of the chicken or egg thing when it comes to assigning blame on this season and assigning blame for the bench is, you know, is it Spencer's fault that he doesn't have any confidence because when he wasn't playing well, his minutes got cut and his opportunities got cut? Or is it Doc Rivers' fault for not keeping confidence in Spencer Hawes when that stuff happened? But, you know, Spencer didn't deserve the confidence. So it's like the circle of...
Right.
It's the circle of just problems. Is that from The Lion King, Circle of Problems?
Circle of Problems is Lion King, or it might be Little Mermaid. I think there's a circle of problem at that, some point in there.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, now I'm thinking about Little Mermaid songs. Thanks, Zach. Yeah, so I mean, I think like that's an issue. You know what I mean? I think, look, for as much as we made it this far without me saying my favorite name to say, according to Matt Moore, you know, for as much as garbage and crap as Austin Rivers takes, he won them at least two playoff games and played a pretty big role in them winning a third.
Yeah,
probably won them three playoff games.
Yeah, no, he was surprising. Like he had some pretty big lows in this series, but he had big highs in the playoffs as well. So I think that the fact that he won them one playoff game makes it a good acquisition.
100%.
Yeah,
and look, and my guess is they will re-sign him. And my guess is that, and I think they need to re-sign him because he's the type of player that still has ceiling,
right?
Like an unreached ceiling, and. And that's what it's going to take for this team to, I think, to take the next step. Is they're going to have their guys, like, like a big reason why the Warriors were the Warriors this year, a very big reason, it wasn't because of Sean Livingston. It was because they had, I mean, Sean Livingston had a very good year for them. But I think a big reason was they had guys who took giant steps forward individually. You know, Draymond Green went from being a C-plus NBA player to being like a B-plus NBA player, maybe an A-minus. Klay Thompson took a step. Steph Curry obviously took a step. Now, you're not going to expect Chris Paul to take a giant step, but I think you got to look to Blake Griffin. I think you have to look to DeAndre Jordan if you re-sign him. I think you have to look to your guys that are in kind of that pre-prime, right at the prime of their career type moments, and you need those guys to get better. I think that's a huge part of it for the Clippers. And Spencer Hawes, Austin Rivers, those guys are included in that. And they're going to have to get better for this team to take that next step because they don't have the free agent wherewithal. They don't have the assets or the draft picks to make kind of the trades that you would look to kind of bolster a bench. So it's going to have to be kind of piecemeal, I think. And they're going to have to get a little lucky.
Oh, they don't have a single draft pick in this draft, do they?
No, they don't. But that's fairly rectifiable.
I guess they could buy a second round pick pretty easily.
Yeah, I think they can buy into the second round. I think there's a good chance they will. Just kind of again based on where they're cap wise.
I can tell you, Minnesota's not looking to keep their two picks in the second round. That's an easy buy. Yeah.
Everything must go then. I mean, like, you know, or Philadelphia. Yeah. You call it Philadelphia. They like money in Philadelphia.
They do.
And so, you know, you can maybe that's what you do. And again, you're not going to find a guy probably in the second round who's going to make a difference on your roster next year. But it's the type of cost controlled player that you need to have. I think another really important guy for the Clippers going forwards, and it's going to be C.J. Wilcox. They had two first round picks in a row. And if you buy into Austin Rivers being a net positive, they at least turned Reggie. They turned one of them into a player, became a net positive in Reggie Bullock.
Yeah.
But they need C.J. Wilcox to be a guy who, while he's still on this kind of you know the very very cap friendly rookie deal, to contribute. And they like him. I like him as a player. I think he can help them. If there aren't minutes there for him now, but who knows what will happen after the off season. You know, if that's a place where you have three shooting guards and you think all three of them can play, maybe that's a place where you look where you can make a move.
Right. Yeah, I mean, they've got to figure out something with Jamal, right? Because he was
I mean, Jamal,
he was
Jamal
brutal.
Yeah, he was out of rhythm. He really was. He you know, I mean, you saw, I think, in Game 7 some of his value. He is still a shot maker. And when they had no one else making shots, he was still making shots. But, you know, Jamal's not young anymore either.
You're right.
And you know, you worry about some of the other holes in his game becoming bigger ones as he gets older. You know, while he'll become he's talked a lot, and I've seen it at times, been a smarter defender. It's hard to imagine him at 36 being the type of guy that you can count on to play defensive minutes off the bench, you know. So I don't know. And if it's a place where, if it's one of the places where you have assets, maybe that's something you can do to try to shore up other areas. But I mean, they needed his bench scoring all year.
Yeah.
So they're in a tough spot.
Yeah. I mean, you assume they throw whatever Jordan wants at him. And I agree. Once the TV money hits, that's not a bad contract. I don't even know that it's I don't even think it's a bad, like, I don't think it's an ideal contract next season, but the alternative is horrendous.
That's the answer. It's better than the alternatives. And here, I'll go as far as to say that I would be stunned if the Clippers don't offer him the max. Essentially, Doc Rivers has said that they would do whatever it takes. He was asked about it today, and, like, without knowing the tampering rules, he didn't want to say, yes, we will offer him X for X.
Right.
You know, he's like, yeah, we'll do it. I mean, like, they are committed to that.
Yeah, and do we have to worry about a rift with this team, or are they okay?
I think they're fine.
Yeah,
I think I haven't seen any signs of anything that aren't basketball frustrations. You know what I mean? Like, you're a team. Like, there's going to be on-court basketball frustration. There's no question, and there's going to be stuff at the end of an 82-game season, but I don't think it's anything to the point where guys don't want to play with
right.
each other. That's not the indication I've been given.
It's not like a gambling rift has... or a gambling debt has thrown a rift into this team that can't be repaired, right?
I would assume that.
Or like a Tony Braxton love triangle has not occurred.
None that I'm aware of.
Yeah.
At this point. No, I mean, I think it's, you know, I mean, I saw the report today, and it was interesting, and I put some calls out, and I have not, I will say that, I mean, it's not, I'm not in the habit of saying people are wrong on stuff. That's just not, I mean, I'm sure Bill talked to somebody who was plugged in on something, and the people I've talked to have just told me different. And that's, to me, that's just kind of what it is. So, we'll see. I mean, I don't think it's the type of thing that would force him to leave. Chris is demanding. I mean, Chris Paul is a demanding player.
That's what you want, though, right? I mean,
yeah.
Especially he can back it up as well. Like
you know what I mean?
Let's talk about the whole Chris Paul, like, getting blamed. Like, he played really well in the last three games of this series.
He did. He was a little passive for me early in game seven. I didn't think, like, he really got going until the second half. And by then it was maybe too late.
Sure.
But, you know, and he missed some shots in the fourth quarter game six, as everybody did. I don't know. I mean, it's...
Yeah, I mean, the missing shots in the fourth of game six, like, that is something he shouldn't have done. I mean, that was the time he played poorly and they needed him to step up. But other than that, like, he played really well.
That was kind of like... But that was kind of like a six-man moment, too.
Right.
Like, that's like what it felt like.
We're talking about
Ghost
the movie.
Marlon Wayne.
Right, yeah. Okay.
Yes. I felt like Ghost Marlon Wayne, or Ghost Kadeem Harrison, sorry, was
floating
around. R.I.P. Dwayne Wayne. It was like floating around, like swatting balls away.
Right.
I mean, that's what that felt like.
I still can't get over the fact that if Chris Paul doesn't hit that three at the end, that meaningless three.
Unbelievable.
Josh Smith outscores the Clippers in that fourth quarter.
And Corey Brewer.
Yeah, Corey Brewer hit more shots than the Clippers did anyway.
That three going in was like the ultimate salt in the wounds for that quarter. That was like, if you believe in mysticism and stuff like that, it's that three going in is like part of your argument.
Right.
For like karmic weirdness. So yeah, I mean, my thing is like, look, this is probably the first time that a Chris Paul team has lost, at least the Clippers, has lost to a team that I felt like they're better than.
Yeah.
This was the first one, you know? And so is it a choke that they lost to an Oklahoma City team with Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook and Serge Ibaka?
Yeah, that one I don't buy. Yeah, I don't buy that one. I do think that this is the first time for me that Chris Paul has lost a series he should have won.
Yeah, and so, you know, if this keeps happening, does that become part of his narrative? Probably.
And that's after winning
part of it anyways.
That's after winning the series last round that he shouldn't have, right?
Yeah,
I mean, the
Spurs series is what makes this all weird.
Yeah,
like really weird. It's because like that team is almost like unquestionably like a different basketball team. Doc said something today. I know you said you didn't buy this, but that like when he heard from like his San Antonio guys like R.C. Buford and stuff after that series, the thing they were worried about was that the Clippers would use up everything in that series. That was something he said the Spurs guys said to them.
Yeah.
They were worried that they ran out of gas. And now, you know, look, I mean, he went into that series knowing he would play a very, very tight rotations, that he would have to play very tight rotations. And those were super intense games. Like, it was a draining series to just be around. But again, you're right. They were up 3-1.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't think that's why they lost, but it's an interesting theory.
Right. Maybe they only had enough for the first four games, and then they were just too beat to be able to compete with the Rockets in games 5, 6, and 7. I still think that the Rockets just stopped playing like crap.
Well, that was part of it too.
And started challenging them and started playing much smarter basketball, and then it became a situation where, like you said, like they put themselves in a weird position, not bringing in Game 5, where they could be in some serious trouble if they dropped Game 6, and then they had the fluke comeback by the Rockets.
Yep.
I think you can call that a fluke when Josh Smith and Corey Brewer lead a comeback in the fourth quarter. And
James Harden on the bench.
Yeah, and then at that point, it's deflating to a certain extent, and then you have to – it's a real gut check, and – they didn't have it, and the Rockets did. And I think the Rockets were just resilient, and the Clippers just couldn't find a way to bring that back, and maybe that's, I don't know, softness, or maybe it is that they gave everything they had in the first round against the Spurs. Like, that's the thing, is I don't know that we're actually going to get an answer, right?
Well, I mean, that's the really hard part about all of this stuff, right, is that it's, you know, 2 weeks ago, the Clippers were mentally tough.
Right, yeah, they just went
through this incredibly mentally tough series, and Chris Paul, you know, killed all his narrative because he won a series that felt like the conference finals. He beat the Spurs, you know. Now, were there elements, maybe the fact that they thought they accomplished something before they didn't let their foot off the gas? I think so.
Yeah, probably.
I think that happened.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of immaturity. And I think that's part of, like, the learning process for this team. And the shame of it is that, you know, A, it robbed us of the series I think we all wanted to see most in the playoffs. In the sense, at least for a minute, like a drama sense.
Right.
Clippers Warriors would have been.
Oh, it'd been great.
It would have been super fun. You know, except for having to see Ethan all the time. Other than that, I can't imagine
how tough that would have been.
Yeah. Other than that, I think it would have been great. They'd been back and forth off the court. They're like, it would have been physical and you know, both teams. That real bad blood. It would have been a blast. And I think that maybe they started to look ahead a little bit. Maybe the foot came off the gas a little. I think maybe they thought they bought the fact that they broke through, and didn't stick with the process as much. It's hard to know what happened, but I'll tell you what, like, it's going to stick with them for a long time.
Yeah.
And this is going to be the really interesting challenge for them moving forwards, is that they were, this year, I thought particularly early in the season, were a team that was kind of bored with the regular season. But they wanted to get to the playoffs, like, right away. And it was hard because of how last year ended, because of the Game 5 collapse and stuff like that. I would imagine that October, November, December for the Clippers this year is going to be miserable.
Yeah. I mean, you go through... You're going to go through the entire season, especially early on with training camp and media day and all that, of, well, now what do you guys do? You know, you guys collapsed again, or you failed again, and now you've got to, how do you get through the season and know that that could be happening, you know, 6 months from now? And then once they get to the playoffs, it's going to be, well, yeah, you won a first-round series, but are you going to win the second? I mean, until they actually come through and get to a Western Conference Finals, if they can at all, that's the thing.
I'm going to put this out there, too. I don't even think a trip to the conference finals does anything. I don't think that answers the questions. It really does. Nobody ever talks about, when they talk about Charles Barkley's legacy, it's never that he got to a conference final or any of that stuff. And I think it's sort of where their hurdle is right now.
Right.
The one they can't clear.
Right.
But it's not the finish line. And I think that's not made clear enough.
Oh no! Like, eventually they'll move the goalposts. Like, if Chris Paul had made it to the conference finals and then got blown out by the Warriors or whatever, it would be, oh, he's never made it to the finals. I mean, that's
exactly. That they would still these questions about, are they still chokers?
Right.
Why can't they finish? These things they won't go away until they win a title. And even then, they've got a lot of history to undo. So I mean, I think honestly that's the standard that they've put themselves at, and that's the standard. That's why they deserve a lot of the harsh judgment today, because this is the bar they've set for themselves. They are a team that should be measured by rings at this point. That's when they have that kind of top tier talent. They have that kind of coach.
Yeah.
They have that kind of owner.
Yeah.
You know, so it's all in place. Except they just have to figure out how to do it, and I think it's going to be. It's tough. It's a very hard process, and particularly for a team that's never done it before. I don't know. This is depressing. Let's talk about something joyful.
Yeah. Let's. Well. Yeah. We were just really killing time. I mean, we were killing a half hour with basketball talk to justify the 20 minutes of Pitch Perfect 2, right? Whiplash.
Yeah. I mean. Okay. So. I saw Pitch Perfect 2 on opening night. Super packed theater.
Okay.
It's like 8 o'clock showing. I wanted to see it so badly. It was an assigned seat theater.
Mm.
I sat in the second row.
Okay.
And saw it from a, like a right elbow, or like it was like if you watched an entire basketball game from the right block.
Okay.
Like looking up at the basket. That's sure. what it was like.
Sure.
Okay. And I really liked it. I didn't love it. I mean, like, the first movie is, like unfiltered total love.
Yes.
Like, I love the first movie. If it is on TV, I will watch it. It is my Shawshank Redemption.
You asked me, we started texting after I saw it on Saturday,
yeah.
and you asked me, you know, out of 4 stars, how many do you give it? Well, for the first one, I would give it 4 out of 4. Like, I agree.
Yeah.
If it's on, I will throw it on. I think it's a yeah. really well-done movie. The music's great. The characters are great.
The jokes are really good.
The jokes are really good. I can't stand Becca, who is the main character. And yet, even though I can't stand her, I think it's kind of like a perfect movie.
Yes. Okay. So, how Aka Perfect was Perfect too?
It was not Aka Perfect. It was Aka Flawed, but I still really enjoyed it. I think for me, it took a long time to get into the movie. I felt like it was a real slow start, and maybe part of the problem with that is the the commercials for it. You know that there's going to be the incident in front of the president, right?
Yeah.
So like that kind of steals some of the thunder, and that's like the big opening. That was a poor choice of words. That's like the big, the big event. That's a big event. I might get in trouble for that. It's a big event at the beginning of the movie that's supposed to like, really like boom, Pitch Perfect 2. Here we go.
It ignites the plot.
Yeah, it's like a galvanizing force. Like just here we go. Now we're
okay,
in.
Okay. All right. So this is the spoiler zone of Pitch Perfect 2.
Yeah,
are we in on the spoilers?
Yeah, you're gonna get. This is Spoilerville. Population us, and if you don't want to be a part of Spoilerville, move out right now. Stop the podcast.
Okay, so here are my big gripes with that movie.
Okay.
Okay. Number one, and I didn't think this would be a weird gripe. I was distracted by how little Skylar Astin was in the movie.
Yeah.
Which I found very distracting that, someone who is such a big part of the first movie. Like, I think that's one of the things that made the first movie so fun, is that it wasn't just about the Bellas. You know, it's about the Troublemakers a lot, too. And the Troublemakers in this are just an afterthought. Like, I think we see them perform once.
Yeah, twice, if you're counting the party.
The riff-off.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so, and at that, it was... issue number one. I think issue number two for me, is it me or was the music not as good?
Music was not as good. Coincidentally, a lot more Pitbull in this one. But
yeah, is that partly because, like, just the modernization? Like, maybe I just don't like current music as much.
Yeah, that's probably part of it. Although they had a couple of the old school things in there, but I think it's also
and
like
those are probably my favorite moments. I would guess. Like obviously, like the riff off was fun, and
but there's such a forced storyline of you need to learn how to become original, so you can't do these covers. And like, I didn't care about
I actually liked that song though. Oddly enough, I did like that song.
It's fine, but like I didn't think it was a bad song. I just didn't care about it.
Yeah, I would have rather, I would have rather had seen them perform, I don't know, anything.
No, it's, all right. Here's my other problem with the movie. So I just as a upfront, like you had asked me how many star out of 4 stars would I give it. I give it 2.75. I think it's enjoyable. I think it's good. I don't think it's great, and I don't think it's anything close. I think it's a huge step down from the first movie, while still being enjoyable.
I would agree. I felt like it was way more contrived.
And here's my main problem with that, and why it's so. The characters at this point seem cartoonish. Like they seem like caricatures of themselves. Like, and even the new characters. Like there was the original girl. Well, no, is she like Guatemalan? Like
the Guatemalan? Yeah, like that was kind of funny, but it was also really broad.
It was really forced, and it was really just like I get it, like she's from South America or she's from Central America or she's wherever she was from. I can't remember what country she was from, but like wherever she was from, like I get it. Like it's a third world country.
Yeah, and it's probably not even really a third world country, but the way they played it was
right.
It
but
was
the way they played it, it's like
where it's like
yeah. I mean, so
like where everybody gets kidnapped and held for ransom. And
right.
Like
yeah. I felt like Fat Amy was like super cartoonish compared to like last one seemed natural to me.
I actually was okay with her in this movie a little and I wonder if my real feelings on Pitch Perfect 2 are going to come on viewing 3.
Yeah.
Because that's probably where my real feelings about Pitch Perfect 1 occurred.
That's fair.
You know what I mean? Like, I mean, here, some highlights. I thought the ripoff was super fun.
It was great. And I really liked the angle of, and this is why the Troublemakers aren't in it so much, is like, I thought Das Sound Machine was fantastic.
I like them too.
I like the characters. I like the characters. I like the way they performed. Like I liked it all. Like I
singing
thought
with a German accent, singing with really strong German accents.
Really strong German accents. Like did it for me.
Yeah, it was very enjoyable. I enjoyed that. I thought the Bell's performances for me weren't as good.
Right.
This part was super contrived, but I did like it for whatever reason. The Anna Camp.
Right.
Was that, do you think that was someone's idea? Was like her last name's Camp, let's have her work at a camp?
It had to have been, right?
I was very excited to see it. Do you know what it reminded me of a little bit? In a weird way? It's the fourth season of Arrested Development.
Oh.
Where I liked it because I don't know if I just liked it because I liked seeing like all these people that I liked.
Yeah. Yeah, it was reunion.
Like, it was good to see them. And, you know what? If they do a third one, I'll see it. And they're going to do a third one. It seems very obvious, by the way that this movie happened, that they are going to transfer this into a third one with a new, younger cast. And that'll be fun.
And we'll have cameras from the originals and all that stuff.
Exactly. Maybe we can get Robin Roberts back in Pitch Perfect 3.
She makes a totally random appearance.
That is so... It was so distracting.
It was startling because I didn't recognize her right
away. She was the only one, too. What other celebrities were there?
Right.
There weren't any other celebrity Bellas.
Yeah, because Katie Sagal is like a character in the movie. Like she's a mother of the new
and
girl.
A great singer and a really good singer too, which I thought was a little underutilized.
Do you think that was good?
No, she's a good singer. She's she sang a lot on the Sons of Anarchy soundtrack.
Oh, okay.
She's like a really good smoky voice. She's a very good singer.
Okay. Yeah, no, the voice that came out of her was great. But yeah, like the final scene, they bring out all the old Bellas. And Robin Roberts, and for like, I think I missed like a minute and a half of that movie after I saw her because I was trying to place who it was because it was so startling to me I couldn't recognize who she was.
And it looked like she was like green screened in too, right. Like she filmed it, like she wasn't able to get to Brussels or wherever they filmed the Acapella World Championships, the AWCs.
This is a really deep pull, but it reminded me of Major League 3 Back to the Minors, where they CGI they CGI'd in like a throw from the outfield with Tanaka. And it's just completely off and looks like really badly CGI'd, and that's how I thought I was like, why is that a Robin Roberts hologram? Like why is she there?
And it made me wonder, honestly, how hard it would be. Like how So a goal for me, this is just an informal career goal over the next like 3 years, is can I get well known enough to be CGI'd into Pitch Perfect 3 as like an alumni troublemaker or something like that?
I mean, you got to get in with Adam Devine.
Where was Donald?
Was he too busy? That was my biggest issue with the movie, actually, is the fact that he wasn't in it because he was great. Yeah, he was my favorite. From the first one.
Did I tell you that I saw Donald and Adam Devine together in a Clipper game?
No.
Sorry, I don't know Donald's name. Apparently a big Washington Wizards fan. He was wearing a John Aldridge. They were playing the Wizards.
Oh, okay.
Adam Devine's a season pick holder for the Clippers. Adam Devine, by the way, I think it was game 7 Is it maybe Game 7 or was it Game 3 of the series? I think it may have been Game 3 of the Houston series. It was the opening night of Pitch Perfect 2, like the premiere.
Right.
Does that sound right?
Yeah, that's Game 3.
I think it was Game 3, okay? Adam Devine left the premiere to come watch Game 3.
I thought I saw pictures of him at the game and was wondering, yeah. I was like, well, didn't he have the premiere? But, okay, that's a devoted fan.
He left early to go to the game.
Yeah. You actually left the game early to go to the premiere, which I thought was weird.
Yeah, he gave me his pass. It was very nice of him. I really enjoyed it. It wasn't, though, like, I didn't leave it with that, oh, my God, I just saw something I want to recommend to everybody movie, which, funnily enough, happened to me on one of my 15 flights to Houston in the last week. I watched Whiplash.
Phenomenal movie.
And it was the first time I hadn't seen it, and man, oh man, that movie is amazing.
So you know
Kobe likes this movie, right?
No, I didn't know.
Like
that.
Kobe is like apparently talked about Whiplash before, which makes so much sense.
Oh, it's. I mean, Matt and I were joking about it when I finally saw it because he was kind of like, it's this story of this overbearing teacher who's just abusive and blah blah blah, and then the joke was like, just juxtapose his personality with my personality. It's this beautiful story of a mentor who guides his student into becoming a great player. So like, I would kind of like resonate with the J.K. Simmons character much more than I would resonate with anything else, because I like the whole like hard ass version of teaching people and all that stuff. And to me, like, it was kind of like that, where I found myself throughout the entire movie going, no, he's just trying to bring out the best in this guy. He's trying to make him good. And he's trying to make him
like,
perfect. And that's what I loved about
it. I mean, I'm a softie then, because there are parts of that movie where I'm just like, I left that movie wondering like how different my life would be if someone ever was like that with me.
Do I need to be the J.K. Simmons to your Miles Tenor? Turner? What's his name?
Teller,
that's what it is, yeah.
Miles Turner, isn't that the guy who's the lottery guy?
He's a potential lottery pick in a month, yeah.
Okay.
He might be in the movie, though.
If the Toronto Raptors draft Miles Teller to play drums for Drake. I think there are certain lines that obviously are crossed. You know what I mean? Like the easy guy, the way I was discussing it with C.J. Wilcox, who's a movie guy on the Clippers, rookie. And I was telling him that, like, you know, it's like, imagine Bob Knight, but like if Bob Knight was teaching music.
Right.
I would assume that that's like what Bob Knight's like. Now, I would have liked to have seen more of, like, we saw little glimpses of how human he could be at certain times. Also, spoiler. This is to spoil everything for everybody. The end of that movie is just fantastic. The last 10 minutes of Whiplash are so good.
I was literally on the edge of my seat, just like completely enthralled with that whole scene. And then it ends, and I was just like, "This cannot possibly be over. Like, I am not okay with this being over. Like, I need more."
Yeah, like I would. Okay, so we would both sign off on Whiplash too, right?
Oh yeah. Well, I guess how would you do that?
No, Whiplash 2 is him now. He's going, so, okay, to make a basketball. Okay. So he essentially goes from being like, he takes a Steph Curry leap in that moment, right?
Right.
Like, he becomes like the MVP.
Yes.
Like, he's, you know, maybe this is an all-time great drummer in that moment. But, like, you know, hey, man, following up is tough. Second season's hard. You got other guys coming for you. You got the handsome red-haired guy.
What's the second season of being a jazz drummer?
I don't know. That's all they do. The World Acapella Competition. Just have it like the World Drumming Competition. The WDCs.
Yeah.
Okay?
Okay.
He performs for the president, and he accidentally shows his crack.
Or we need a mashup of Whiplash Perfect.
Whiplash and Caravan. By the way, I feel like I know those two songs very well, and if I knew that's like what modern jazz was, maybe I should listen to modern jazz.
Yeah, maybe you should throw that on while you're writing your articles.
Do you think that would help me, or are you going to come over and throw laptops at me?
If I just like throwing your computer all over the floor,
and just curse at me like constantly.
Yeah, just swearing at you, trying to download viruses.
Yeah, no. Real other quick little movie recommendation. Before I run, I got to do. We both have to do other stuff.
Yeah.
I saw a very good documentary today. Called "Mistaken for Strangers."
Okay.
It is about the National, the band The National.
Okay.
And it's the lead singer has like kind of a loser brother who like lives in his parents' basement in Cincinnati, who's got, he's 9 years younger than the lead singer and has total issues, and he goes on tour with them to make a documentary.
Oh.
And it becomes very meta. It ceases to be about the band, and it starts being about their relationship and about the making of the movie.
Okay, so if I don't...
Very, very good.
If I don't care about The National, I'll still enjoy
it. Won't bother you at all.
Okay.
Yes, 100%. Okay. Very good. I enjoyed it very much. Also, very excited for the new Steve Jobs movie. I saw the trailer for it during Mad Men. Didn't realize Michael Fassbender was in it. And I am all in on Michael Fassbender.
Is he Steve Jobs?
Yes.
Okay. Hey, have you watched Silicon Valley?
I love it.
It's so good. I just caught up over the last week.
And Veep. Yeah, well, it's been great this season. Veep is also awesome.
Yeah, Veep's my favorite show right now.
Does Jonah Ryan follow you on Twitter? I feel like you guys have tweeted back and forth.
We have tweeted quite a bit. He doesn't follow me, but we're working on it. And by we're working on it, I mean the more I tweeted him.
I almost tried to name drop you with Hannibal Buress.
Oh, really? Okay.
Recently. Because he was at Clipper Games.
Yeah.
And I'm a big Hannibal Buress fan. He's from Chicago.
He's fantastic.
I am from Chicago.
That's my
And my goal is to know every celebrity from Chicago.
Okay.
And so I was going to seek him out and say, hey, I'm a friend with the head wolf among wolves.
Okay. Yeah, I don't, I mean, I don't know that, well, I guess he would know my name.
NBA 2K's very own, Zach Harper.
Yeah, like we've tweeted, we've DM'd a bunch, we've, he might know my name.
That's your guy.
Yeah, that's my guy. Also, Ian Carmel. I love me some Ian Carmel.
Yeah, that's another guy. I followed him for a little while, and I unfollowed him recently.
Oh.
I know.
This puts me in an awkward position.
I'm going to air this publicly. But I feel like he's the type of person I'm going to refollow at a certain point in time, and I'm just going to keep following and unfollowing until he notices me and follows me back.
Okay, that seems mature. That's a good decision. Can I recommend a movie? It's very limited release and very little known. Mad Max Fury Road. Excellent.
I am looking forward to it, actually. And it is probably, now that I've got some free time, it is on my, I will matinee it.
I watched that movie midday on Saturday, went to Cheesecake Factory, had some Skinny-licious shrimp tacos, and then went back for Pitch Perfect 2. It was a whole outing.
See, and I wonder if part of the reason why I like Pitch Perfect 2 was that I had, like, 3 glasses of wine before I entered.
Okay.
Like the theater that I saw I've seen, like, the boozy theaters before.
Sure.
But this one had, like, you could buy it at the counter with your popcorn and just take it to your seat.
Well, they have like a, I mean, I know this from being in Australia, that they have these things called like gold class theaters. I'm pretty sure they have them here in a lot of cities, but like you would order your food and then say like, I want this halfway through the movie. And then they would bring it halfway through the movie.
Oh, that is such a good idea.
It was amazing. So you could order like, I want drinks in the first quarter of the movie. I want my food at the middle point, and then I want like a dessert 3/4 of the way through the movie. And then they just bring it spaced out.
Okay, that's a terrific idea.
Yeah, it was brilliant.
Did any of our other Pitch Perfect friends see this yet? Did Ledlow see it?
I don't know that she has seen it. I don't know that Robbie has seen it. I believe Adam Reisinger has seen it, and I think he loved it.
Yes.
Yeah. Did Andrew Hahn see it?
I don't know if he's seen it yet or not. Okay. I feel like he hasn't and is going to.
Okay. Yeah, he needs to get on that. I think I want to see it again in the theater before it's done. I want another run.
Can I recommend Second Row Far Right?
Second Row Far Right
in a big theater.
Because I had tickets.
Everybody's nose looks so pointy from that angle.
Had tickets.
Also distracting.
I like going back row because I don't like people behind me making noise. But there were two let's just say large obnoxious women in front. Of my row, and so before the trailers even start, I got up and I moved way down, to where I knew that I wouldn't be distracted by them.
Okay, so did we ever talk about Magic Mike?
I haven't seen Magic Mike.
Okay, so Magic Mike, again, movie that I was taken to by the girl I was dating at the time, just like Pitch Perfect. Very similar clientele in terms of the male to female ratio in the theater. I actually really like Magic Mike. I thought that Steven Soderbergh is kind of fun.
I've heard good things. Yeah, I'm not against it. I just haven't seen it yet.
And I wonder if that sequel is going to, how similar that sequel will be to Pitch Perfect.
Okay.
We'll not be seeing it opening night. I don't know, maybe. Who knows? If I'm doing pull-ups and, like, I've got, like, good, like, male stripper body by then, who knows?
You know, I've got a messed up right shoulder, but I want to join this pull-up gang with you. I'm going to try to learn how to do pull-ups.
What's the most you've ever done? What's the most you've ever done?
I don't know. Probably 10, 12, something like that.
You have no idea how much stronger you are than me.
But that
already.
That was 10 years ago. Like, this is not anything.
I've never been able to do more than two. Ever.
Okay.
And I might be lying. I might be lying about that. And, like... And I could do other stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I wasn't like I was, like, some schlubby, this is what everybody says, like, oh, I used to be a good athlete. Like, I could do stuff.
Yeah. No, I'm right
not
there
with
you.
Not that, though, ever.
Okay.
I don't know. If I could go on HGH for, like, 6 months and be assured that I could do, like, eight
you
months,
have You have probably, the time I, off.
I would probably do it.
You have the time off between now and the start of the season. You could go in the best shape of your life to training camp.
I put on 8 pounds of muscle. I'll tweet about it on Media Day.
And I'll just scream at you the entire time, making you be better.
You're just going to throw pull-up bars at me.
Yeah, which might be dangerous, but just trust me on this.
Yeah, no, that's all right. Hey, Charlie Parker didn't become Bird until that other guy threw a symbol at him. I didn't become male stripper body until Zach Harper... threw creatine bottles at me from across the room.
Well, I think that's a perfect place to end it because you've got radio to do, I've got radio to do, and
yep.
I guess we can follow your workout updates at Dan Wyke Sports on Twitter and read you in the Orange County Register. And
I
Dan,
will absolutely not be posting about my summer end.
Unless you get into really good shape.
Then my profile picture will be shirtless.
Right. Thanks, Dan.
All right, Zach. I didn't become male stripper body until Zach Harper threw creatine bottles at me from across the room.